As the Pacific rises and overcomes our hearts. This is This Week in Mormons, everyone. I don't know what that means, what I just said. But I like the thunderous sounds you're making right now.
I was the rising Pacific, Jeff.
Those were great nature sounds.
Okay.
It reminds me of when I was in a band a number of years ago. I made a terrific record. We thought the ultimate would be to have a secret song because, you know, that was the thing 12 years ago. And so it took me forever, and I found a CD full of, like, nature tracks, and so there's 3 glorious minutes of wind and rain and waves.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
And people listen to them all the time, huh?
Not really. It was very over the top. We had to, you know, it was like we had to check off. We had to have the acoustic guitar song on the album. We had the secret song, which was just piano. And nature sounds. It was supposed to lull you off.
Oh, it did. Sleep. It did, just like this conversation.
So
just
Al,
kidding. All right.
So, Al, I miss you. We are apart once more. It's very sad.
I just got back. I was mountain biking up in Logan.
Where are you?
Hello, all you Logan listeners.
Yeah, we have so many.
I sure was.
Actually,
I was
we
up
do.
In Logan. It was a great, lovely day.
Was it good? Did you break your arm or anything? Anything like that?
Nope. No broken arms.
That's good. That was fun a couple of years ago when that happened. But that's good.
Yeah, that was pretty gnarly. Remember when we raised money to save Al's arm?
I remember when we raised money to save Al's arm.
And the Twim Army mobilized and paid for my surgery.
We raised dozens of dollars. Dozens.
More than dozens. More than dozens.
We raised hundreds of dollars for your surgery.
We sure did, and I appreciate that.
Technically, we were probably supposed to declare that as some sort of tax something, but...
I don't know how these things work.
Neither do I. I just
claim ignorance.
I just wanted to set up a PayPal link and just have people help. I don't care about the technicalities of it all.
You're down in San Diego, is that right, John?
No, I'm in Orange County. I'm in my native land.
Oh, the OC.
Yeah, I'm hanging out here in Barb's house. You know it well.
Oh, yeah. Boy, do I.
Yeah, so I'm just here for a couple days, you know, living the dream in the Southland.
When do you head back to D.C.?
Next week, maybe sometime.
You haven't even bought a ticket, have you?
It's a buddy pass. I can just do it whenever. It doesn't matter.
Oh, my gosh.
But I'm guessing next week, possibly Tuesday. It's been a while. I should probably, you know.
Boy, you are really liking being home in California.
I'm really liking just not. Yeah, I
don't
know. You know,
the oranges sure are not in season yet.
No, they're not. But
what could
I've barely been in California. I mean, I spent like 6 days in Utah, so.
I know. Utah's great. Isn't it wonderful?
I had a terrific time there. It was nice of you to let us hang out at your house. Nice of your roommates, especially.
Oh, yeah. They love you. They ask for you back.
Yeah,
actually.
They can't stop raving about me, I'm sure.
They really can't. They say, where'd that bearded nationalist go?
I am the bearded nationalist. So today I...
That's what lives on in your heart.
So, it's time for Jeff's movie corner right now.
Okay.
I saw the film The Lucky One, the Zac Efron, Nicholas Sparks thing.
Wait, what is this about?
What isn't it about is the better question, because it just covers, if you're into dog washing and seeing footage of that, this could be the romantic drama for you, because they wash dogs and train them. There's also a whole thing with a kid playing a violin and his actual father gets crushed by a treehouse in a river. So, If you're really into all this could be the movie to change your world, folks. I understand it was a bit of a box office disappointment, especially for Nicholas Sparks adaptations, but let me tell you, friends, it was great. The main plot is that Zac Efron's a soldier in Iraq, which is believable on its own, and he finds a random picture of some beautiful woman, and she's like his guardian angel. He stays miraculously safe through countless attacks, so when he gets home, he just wants to find her and thank her. But as you might guess, things become more complicated than that when they make love in the shower.
Oh, gosh.
So.
I was not prepared for this.
That's basically, I jumped through some plot points there, but because this is not a very complex
film.
Wait,
so is this a Jeff Openshaw thumb up or thumb down?
No, it is a thumbs down. I mean, in a way, it's a thumb up.
Whoa, this is a shock. Hold on, because the whole time, the review sounded great.
Well, it's great because it sucks. So, take that as you will.
I'm so confused right now.
I mean, if you find it at the Dollar Theater, go and see it. Don't take your parents. Don't take a prudish woman, one who might be offended if you were to touch the small of her back, for example. you know, just
but more the slutty woman who encourages take small
the
back touching.
Really take the hussies who really want to see some of that. That borderline late night Cinemax action, folks. It's PG-13, but it's a hard PG-13.
Well, noted. Thank you. I like the movie.
You know, these are the things I do when I'm home. My sister's around. You know, we all have. It's just when it's at the Dollar Theater, it's value.
You took your sister to see this.
Why would I go see this by myself? Look,
and you
watched them
in the shower with your sister while you touched the small of your sister's back?
Whoa. So many lines being crossed by you. Why would I go see this by myself? What do you think you call up the guys and you're like, hey guys, let's go see a Nicholas Sparks film? Especially not when Battleship was playing in the screen next door. And so if I wanted to see mindless action, it was right there.
More mindless action.
I just wanted to bring you up to date on what something that happened to me today. That's all. I just figured I'd share with everyone.
Here's what I've been doing.
I saw a terrible film. It was wonderful. And I bought a Wolf shirt. So really, the day hasn't been half bad.
No, it's not a loss in my mind.
Well, Wolf shirts are lovely.
So we got some Mormon stuff going on.
Occasionally, we do talk about the things.
And some no. Some hot and some cold. Go ahead. The LDS Church donates $1.5 million to immunization efforts.
I don't know how I feel about that. As a parent,
which is interesting,
as a parent
because
no Mormons
agree with immunization.
I'm afraid of the system, and I feel that they are going to ruin my children.
Because let's be honest, it's probably mostly Mormons, Amish people, and homeschoolers that are against immunizations, right? Or informed mothers.
Did you say Jehovah's Witnesses?
No, them too.
Because I feel like they would also be against immunizations.
Do you follow any of that stuff? I feel like the immunization thing gets a weird rap. Like anytime anybody brings up immunizations, if you're against them, then you're a fanatic, and if you're for them, like you're fanatically for them. There's no like, oh yeah, you know, it could go either way. There's been something.
Well, here's from my personal experience. When I was 5 or so, you know, let's look at it this way. I've never gotten tetanus. Or hepatitis, or anything of that nature. So I don't know, but I'm just going to say I've never gotten those. And so perhaps I've been protected from them.
By God or the immunizations?
Well, here's the thing. God helps those who help themselves. If an immunization is a pathway to healthy living, I think that's the first step you have to take. And then expect Heavenly Father to show up and do the rest. Now, you might have your own personal convictions. That's fine. Do whatever you want.
Because there's been plenty of stuff that talks about like, you know, like, I mean, you'd feel like a pretty big schmuck if you gave your baby an immunization and then it turned out to like really hurt it. Right. I mean,
you'd feel like a pretty big tool.
I mean, like any needle into a kid, I mean, you're bound to have some that like react poorly to it.
This is true, but that is the risk we have to take to have a better society. Look, polio is almost beaten. Almost.
We almost got polio.
I'm serious.
We're so close.
Like, polio is not completely eradicated from our society. Most of the way is.
From our society, it is completely eradicated.
No, it still actually exists in isolated cases.
From other societies, maybe not.
No, American society. All right, everyone's going to be in an iron lung in 10 minutes.
Oh, boy. We're in trouble. Well, so anyway, the church says here have $1.5 million.
I feel like, I wasn't asked how I felt about that though.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, I would enjoy it if perhaps Salt Lake would run it by us as the members and see how we feel.
Wait, I thought you were pro immunization.
I am. I just don't like people to assume things. That's all.
I just like to be included.
I just want
to
be asked.
Well, so
these are
immunization efforts that are being matched by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They're being used in like Africa and places like that.
So that sounds pretty okay, actually.
Neat.
So Elder Oaks, we mentioned, of course, that India received its first stake a couple of weeks ago, which is a big deal. It's just terrific, you know. And there's a great article here, Church News and Events. Elder Oaks, of course, goes on this whirlwind tour. 12 days traveling throughout Asia. And it goes through the places he went, Singapore, Malaysia. I didn't even know we actually had any members in Malaysia because it's a Muslim country. But, Cambodia, Hong Kong, Taiwan, ends in India. Fascinating. Now, what's really interesting here, though, Al, is they had basically had a singles conference in India.
Dude, we
missed out.
What doing?
We sit here trying to hit up this Salt Lake scene when we could have kicked it with 600 young single adults from India, Sri Lanka, and Nepal.
We should have gone.
Why didn't we go to this?
Why didn't we go?
I don't know. Why didn't we go to this? Like, what do we have to do that's better? You know?
I bet. How many hookups do you think happened there? Do you think it's like EFY over in India with these things where they just come together?
He puts the Peter Breinholt record on, and then they really just start feeling close to one another.
I actually love the singles conferences they would have over in like Ukraine and Eastern Europe. It's anytime that you have one of these things where like not in Utah or not in California where Mormons are everywhere. It's a big deal because you come from all over. You have a lot vested in this. Like, you're trying to meet some people.
You know, I've never even been to a singles conference, like, here in the States.
I went to one in Orange County when I was there. Oh, I remember. You wouldn't go with me.
The Huntington one? I just never been to one. They've had some in Boston before. I just sit here or when they've had them, I've been involved with somebody anyway. So I'm like, why would I be going to this?
For the spiritual upliftment?
That's not why people go to
singles. To support your leaders?
If I needed to. These are ancillary to the actual church meetings. I don't even think they're official. I don't know what they are. But I don't think that going to a singles conference falls under the auspices of my leaders or of supporting my church leaders.
If a steak dance can fall under that.
A singles conference isn't an excuse. It's a veiled attempt to get people together to meet people. And then you throw a spiritual element on there so we don't feel bad about it in the end. So we feel justified.
Is that true?
I think so. I'm not sitting there trying to take away from people having good spiritual experiences, but I don't think people are going to them with the primary prerogative being, oh my gosh, I want to seek
spiritual uplift. You don't think you're prone to have more spiritual experiences at an event like this than you are sitting at home doing nothing?
You are.
Isn't it time to come in?
You're asking a question.
Bask in the light of the gospel with other people, like-minded people.
This is true.
Similar situation.
Al, you often get slightly off the point. I'm not saying that you will not experience spiritual uplift, and that's a great thing, and I believe it'll happen there. But I think the people who are going to these things, that the spiritual uplift is not reason numero uno. They are going to mingle and meet other people of their peers. And that the spiritual uplift is a wonderful side effect, is a wonderful other thing that happens there. But that's not what drives people there. Otherwise, we should just be happy with all sorts of conferences and general conference and this and that. It's a singles conference for a reason. That's all I'm saying. I do not dispute that there will be spiritual uplift. That's great.
Isn't it true, Jeff? All right, whatever.
So that was the main thing. And, it's just cool. It's actually kind of a nice little ride up here. Because you get to learn a lot about random things like what's going on in Singapore and Malaysia. Cambodia, which actually has had pretty surprising growth for the church of late. You don't even think of Cambodia.
All right, Cambodia.
Being a country that would have decent growth, but there it is. So it's kind of a nice ride up to get a little bit, to hear more about what's going on in the church abroad and especially how that relates to a member of the 12 going to visit. So it's a nice little thing to read, other than the India thing that we have teased about, of course.
Sure. So Jabari Parker, remember him?
You mean from like the past 3 weeks when we always talk about him?
No, we talked about him one time.
And then last
two,
week. Yeah.
Maybe two times. And so the Katie Couric interview is finally out.
Was it not out? Was it a secret?
It wasn't. It's finally there. And they do a pretty good job. Did you get a chance to watch it?
I am going to plead the fifth.
Oh, Jeff.
I cannot incriminate myself.
So they do a good job. He seems like a really nice guy. And then they're talking about him. They're like, Jabari's still, he's trying to decide.
Right.
I think it's interesting how his parents are just like, all we want him to do is grow up and be a nice boy. We're not trying to pressure him into a mission or not. And I say, parents, if you don't pressure him into a mission, who will?
That's true. Then half the time they don't go. Well, I don't know. Is the pressure a real thing? When the expectation is there, it's one thing. Like, my mom, I didn't go on a mission until I was nearly, like, 20 and a half. And,
oh, my gosh.
And I'm fine with that or whatever. And for the first while,
you were written off.
Right when I was hitting 19, there was kind of more pressure and nagging coming from my mom and stuff like that. And eventually she just backed off and, you know, assumed I would figure it out. And I did. You know, I woke up one day and I kind of realized, you know what? I know I'm not going to not do this. So what am I waiting around for? Let's just get this done. And
sure
so, and I made it happen. Now, obviously, he's in a different situation. Mine was more just procrastinating, really, when I look back on it. He has to deal with the very real realities of his career and such, because most of these guys who go on missions, especially in basketball, come back and, you know, they don't just play at that level they were at. They can't really get to back to where they were. Most of them also don't complain, and they figure their life out, and they're fine, but I understand they're being quite a, you know, it's a hard decision to make. And I like that he's been very forthright about it, very straightforward about how he's torn.
Like anytime you watch him, I mean the whole thing, you're just like, what a stand up act. Good kid. I like
it. So does
him.
Anything else happen in the video? I
mean, watch we, it, we, I mean, share I mean, we can, it, use it.
We'll embed the video on the site, of course. But what else, anything else that we learn from it?
No, that's it. What is it? It's just a good like missionary bit.
Alright. So we talked a few weeks ago that an original copy of the Book of Mormon from the first printing of the 5,000 was stolen from a Mesa, Arizona bookstore. And okay, we kind of make fun of it, but that's, you know, that sucks.
Yeah.
So the feds have recovered it all the way out in Herndon, Virginia, which is by where I live. That's out by Dulles. Yeah, we got him. Remember that. And so they found it, and it's worth, you know, they think between $50,000 to $100,000.
So the guy stole the book, apparently, because the lady who had it was ripping out pages and selling them one by one.
Yeah, so J. Michael Linford, a fellow Mormon bookseller who had been like a grandson to the shop owner, was arrested for taking it. And yeah, that's the funny thing, that he basically, I don't know if he took it to capitalize on what they describe in the article as Mormonia. You know, basically that Mormon memorabilia is more exciting. Mormonia, it says, actually. But I don't like that this Helen Spencer Schlee has been tearing out pages and selling them. That's just stupid. You have an original copy and you're like, here, have a page of the original one. I don't know.
Said he stole it because it was never in a safe place. He was doing us a favor. Schlee, my favorite mention in this whole thing is from the last paragraph. It says, Schlee said the theft will not deter her from carrying out her plan. Once she gets the book back from authorities, those plans include selling the remaining 500 pages and using the money to buy an ice cream store whose profits will help fund Mormon missionaries. Lady, you are nuts.
That's the best thing ever. I am going to sell. I mean, how much is she selling each page for?
She's like, I want to run a pizza parlor where third graders can hang out.
She sold two pages for $7,500. So by that logic,
she's gonna sell them all and buy an ice cream.
So what is 7,500 times? Then what's about 530 pages of the Book of Mormon? So that's roughly 265 times 7,500. What does that give us?
Oh, you want me to do the math?
I feel like I need to understand what it takes to open an ice cream parlor.
265.
Yeah.
Times 7,500.
Yes.
Well, let's be honest though. Some of those pages, like
that's I know, but let's just deal with the basics of it.
$2 million.
$2 million? Oh, I believe you could very easily open up an ice cream parlor for that amount.
But let's be honest. I mean, you get into some of those Alma chapters. I mean, really? Or how about Second Nephi? We've seen that in the Bible. Do I really want to pay $7,500?
Hey, Second Nephi 31 is wonderful. All right, take it easy. You just take it easy. So for $2 million, she's going to make an ice cream parlor, and the profits will fund Mormon missionaries. I wonder if the church would ever step in and say, like, lady, you destroyed one of 5,000 copies of the Book of Mormon. We don't want your blood money, basically.
So, along with that,
I feel like we should get a statement from Salt Lake about this.
Yeah, we really should. We really
should.
Because really
I am a concerned citizen, a concerned member. I want to know what's going to happen.
So, in this week in Crazy People,
I thought we
bring to you the reincarnated Hiram Smith.
Yes.
That's right. There's
yes,
a dude.
Yes. A million times, yes.
There's a dude claiming that he was a janitor in a temple, and Hiram or Joe Smith visited him and told him he was the reincarnated Hiram.
Yeah, that's normal.
Sure. And that he was supposed to deliver the Marvelous Work and a Wonder registered trademark. So this guy, he registered Marvelous Work and a Wonder, registered trademark, mind you. And it was his job to deliver. So he had a big thing on Saturday. He was going to come, answer no questions. Then at 8 p.m. after the buffet, answer some questions. Did you ever have like people claiming that they were Christ show up in your mission, Jeff?
No one claiming that they were Christ, but what? I had a guy who was receiving visitations from John the Baptist on a regular basis.
We had a couple Jesuses show up. And they would always, like, it was always bizarre because they'd always have these followings. They'd be like somebody would ask them a question and they were very dodging. They'd be like, well, I will not say that it is, but I will not say that it isn't. And everybody would clap. They'd be like, oh, wow.
Oh,
you can't stump the master.
You know,
I'm like, seriously, people.
This guy on my mission was pretty funny because obviously he was not actually baptized in the church. But he loved it. He had testimony of it, said he received all this other stuff and visitations and what have you. And we're like, all right. Well, you know, it's hard as a missionary. You're kind of like, all right, whatever. You know, play along. Keep you coming back. So one time he gets up there he comes to church and decides to bear his testimony on Fast Sunday. And that's one of those moments, you know, when collectively as missionaries, you're all just kind of...
You hold your breath.
You hold your breath. You are expecting the worst. Instead, he bore one of the most sincere and heartfelt and doctrinally correct testimonies about the atonement and about Christ. Not that I can say testimony should put somebody to shame, but for lack of a better expression, it was like, hey, regular quote-unquote members of the ward, this guy who we regard as a kook just kind of knocked it out of the park and really like hitting the nail on the head when it comes to understanding the atonement. So it was kind of funny that it worked out that way. He still continued to profess. He never got to the pulpit and talked about his visitations, but still.
Dude, it's always an option.
Oh, and this was in your favorite city of my mission. You know the one.
Oh, Zaragoza.
It was in Zaragoza, yes.
I'm glad that I knew that.
So my favorite
bit from this guy's thing is he talks, he keeps a daily journal, which is kind of a crock. And he says, in 2012, when I finally completed my mission, I received 100-fold of what I had lost. That's right. I received for my reward 100 times what I had lost. And since I had lost 2 children, how many would be 100 times that number? Jeff?
4.
100 times 2 is
200.
4. No, it's 4. He says 4.
So he really just means double. He means more like 100% of an increase in children, not 100 times. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think he got confused. But he seems like a nice fellow, and the picture. I think this should be our album art.
Yeah, we maybe I'll do that. We really failed to... I wish we could have gone to the conference thing he had. You know, you were gone, and I was flying out of
Saturday,
Utah. Yeah,
and he had a free buffet.
If anybody attended this... Like, just anybody, please let us know.
It's crazy. He's even got... He somehow talked one of the Smith family people into giving a plot with Hiram Smith written on it, or in the Smith family cemetery out here in Salt Lake. Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
I choose not to believe you. That can't possibly
happen. Anyway, let's be honest, people. If a real Hiram Smith were reincarnated and came here to give us a Marvelous Work and Wonder registered trademark, you would hear about it here. So just keep tuning into this. We'll make sure we give you a heads up.
Yeah.
If you ever, you know, if a Hiram Smith...
We are happens. Your Hiram Smith reincarnated place for news.
We'll be your filter.
All right. So, great little article here. Ugh, I can't talk today. In the Napa Valley Register. Kind of a fun little bit about missionaries on a mission. Of course, like many publications, eager to capitalize on the heightened interest in the church. We have this little paper that takes care of Napa Valley, California. Followed around two Mormon missionaries.
I like their video.
Yeah, the video's pretty good. I like how one of them has clearly been out longer. He knows the talking points. He's ready. He's slick.
The other one is like, I like Jesus.
But it is a funny video. It basically just shows him talking, being pretty straightforward, nothing revelatory here. We don't get any real action of them. It briefly shows him knocking on a door, but nobody answers.
That's neat. Good.
But I like the story. And the story, of course, talks about the Saints in Napa. I like anything that actually shows in a positive and, like, legitimate light what the missionaries are up to. Because so often we get these, you know, we get caricatures of missionaries. But this is a pretty representative, especially somewhere like Napa. I don't think it's exactly known for its, shall we say, Christian-going mentality. But I think it's nice. They don't portray them like idiots or knives or anything like that. They just rock out. It's great. Everyone should read it. It'll make you happy because everyone will realize that there are normal Mormons out there. And missionaries are good.
Hey, so did you know that Marco Rubio left the church?
He was a Mormon. No, he was raised. He was born Catholic. Got baptized like as a teenager or something like that, and then went back to being a Catholic. Yeah, that's been knowledge. That's been pretty out there.
So he just wrote a book where he talked about why he left Mormonism, he doesn't. That's not what the book is about, but he mentions it.
Right. And what have we learned?
Well, it just says, like, he just saw it as a tool that his parents used to keep them morally straight, and they outgrew it, quote-unquote. Kind of an odd thing to throw out there right at this point in the political.
Yeah, but at least he's being straightforward about it. I mean, there's a lot of buzz about him, of course, being a possible VP candidate, along with Mitt Romney, obviously.
Do you think he would accept?
I don't know. I mean, it's a good opportunity for him. I don't know his mindset. Of course, it's great for the Romney campaign. You get a guy who's really well-liked in Florida. He's Hispanic. Covers a lot of bases there by bringing him into the mix. Though, of course, then it begs the question, like, so you've got an active Mormon and then a former Mormon running together. It's kind of interesting. I feel like in that sense, what would be the difference between that or, like, having Huntsman on the ticket? Because Huntsman's not exactly observant, so.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I'm still hoping Huntsman will show up as Secretary of State. Oh, yeah.
Booyah.
So I don't know what'll happen with Rubio and things, but I like that he's being straightforward because oftentimes we get stressed out about Mitt Romney and how not forthcoming he is. You know, he is very slow to talk about his faith. And you got a guy like Rubio who can openly say, I did this, wasn't for me, I'm Catholic again. I prefer that he would have stayed Mormon, but, whatever.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I'm going to talk about Ryan Gosling now because I know you want me to.
I really do. Okay. I want you to do this.
This is starting to go viral. As many of you know, Ryan Gosling was basically raised LDS. He's more openly described it as my parents were Mormon, but I was never really.
He went through seminary.
Something like that. So anyways, Ryan Gosling up there in, I believe he's from Hamilton or he's from London. He's from somewhere around there in Ontario.
Hamilton, Ontario.
And there's a great video that's gone viral on YouTube of Ryan Gosling in 1991, just dancing around at an award talent show or a steak talent show, whatever it is. He is fly, and he's making it happen. First, he sings "When a Man Loves a Woman" with all of the gusto that an 11-year-old kid can muster, and just brings it. And then I feel like it's awkward when I watch him and his sister just dance for like 3 minutes.
No, he's got hammer pants on, man. This kid's ready to go.
Well, he rocks it. He goes back and forth with his sister. They dance like crazy people. It's almost provocative, though. I don't know if it's appropriate at times for a war.
We see this all the time.
Considering half of the songs that play at YSA dances and stuff like that. And you're like, are you folks listening to the lyrics here? I don't know if you are.
I mean, dude, I love those talent shows, man. People show up, and the best are always like the kids that do karate and stuff, and they'll do their karate routine alone on the stage with a bow staff. Those are my favorite.
Anyway, I hope everyone will please watch this video because it's just got Ryan Gosling just hamming it up. This kid's been a performer since he was 10. You know, he knows.
There you go.
It's really funny. We'll embed it on the site. Share it with everyone because I feel like this is the kind of thing that needs to really just jump the shark.
Amen. And finally,
no, we're not
gonna have a short show this week.
No,
I'm
we're
excited.
Not. There's stuff we haven't finished up on yet. We're
okay. The there's a follow up to the why I came out as a gay.
Oh right,
Mormon
right, right. Yeah, I saw
post.
He wrote a
on the weed.
Uh huh.
They dropped an op-ed into the Washington Post, which is kind of cool for him. And just really, I mean, more than anything, they were just like, thanks, everybody, for being so understanding. Like, the response to their post was just completely, you know, we love you guys. You're awesome. And, Jeff, I think you and I would agree. I mean, like, nothing but good will come from conversations around this. And so, really, like, I think it's really cool that he's actually taking the time to do it. And even better is the way that people have responded. Just like supportive and, you know, appreciative of them taking that risk, I guess, to try and articulate how they made it work and what they're doing.
Let's get him on the show.
We should.
I think we should.
We should. The other part of this that I think is interesting is people are, you know, there's a couple of articles that we've read through that talk about the, you know, the people of the church are moving towards a softer stance on gay marriage.
Uh-huh.
I think that the people of the church and the church as a whole is supporting this. People are moving towards a more charitable stance on gays and you know, the gay and lesbian community. Do you see anything, like, do you think that the shift is around gay marriage in particular, or will the shift in like people's, I guess, how they view or whether or not they support gay marriage, will that shift along with like an appreciation of or supporting and loving gay people, or are those two going to be able to stay separate, you think?
Okay, so you're wondering, I just want to make sure I understand. So you're wondering if greater acceptance of just gay people in general will be inherently congruent with accepting gay marriage.
Definitely, I agree 100%. We're definitely moving towards, like, the, you know, the church as a whole and the people in the church are being more supportive.
Well, they are. Here's the thing to wonder, then. I wonder if,
does it necessarily translate to the gay marriage?
No, I mean, I see parallels here, I think, as many of us do, with blacks in the priesthood, for example. And I think before 1978, there were many people who felt that, like, no, that's never going to happen. And there are people who had problems with it, who were kind of at odds with the church in a way for not allowing people of color to have the priesthood. And we thought,
people of color.
Oh, cool. It didn't just apply to blacks. We always think it applied to blacks, but it applied to many different races. Basically, not white people. So, and a lot of us thought, no, that'll never change. And then it did. But my main thing I wonder, though, is would gay marriage ever possibly be in that same category of something that we right now think, oh, that is just never going to happen? And then it might, and the church might be okay with it, because I don't feel like it is, because I feel like, at least doctrinally, and please, anybody, correct me if I'm wrong or set me straight here, but I don't think there's as much, other than modern revelation, purely supporting the withholding of priesthood to people, as opposed to something like gay marriage and homosexual behavior and all that goes very much in line with the law of chastity, which has been sort of immovable and constant for a very, very long time, even, you know, before the Restoration, really, so... I don't know. It's just my stream of thought.
We shall see.
Well, what do you think about that, Al? I mean, I know that we are not the president of the church, but do you feel like it's different in that sense? You know what I mean? Do you feel like gay marriage and its main roots, dealing with homosexuality and immorality and stuff like that, does that make it less likely to be touched, to be alterable, or something along those lines? Because it's rooted in something much deeper, I suppose.
So I think the stories like what Joshua Weed shared are going to be they're going to be pivotal in the church as a whole coming out and support, which they already have, right? Like, there's a shift towards being more Christian regardless of the person's, you know, like, gender, race,
and I'm talking
sexual
about, that's fine, I guess
that
we're
that
being
stuff.
More Christian, more accepting, but what about an actual policy? That's what I'm
talking about. I think that gay marriage will continue to be a separate issue, though. I firmly believe that the church, I just don't understand, like, I don't think that, and as Bruce R. McConkie has often been quoted to say, you know, like, if we think that we can put a stake in the ground and say the church will never change, we don't understand how modern revelation works, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so maybe it does completely change. I think that they can...
It could.
That we can... Logically, we can take away... We can say, you know, marriage, no. But you as a people and anything we can do to help you, yes, right? Like, marriage can and maintain its kind of stance as a separate issue.
Right. And I'm inclined
but maybe
to agree.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm being naive, but I really think that it can.
No, I think it can be a separate issue. And it's going to have to be because I'd be very, very surprised personally if we ever came out to be okay with gay marriage as a church. I don't know if that we would say that we would allow it in our church, but, you know, to be okay with it. But I think instead of being, like you said, more Christian, more accepting and inviting personally to the people in those lifestyles, yeah, I think that'll continue to change. And I think that's a great thing. I look back 4 years, and the Prop 8 campaign, as much as we didn't want it to, you know, it often felt like this big exercise in intolerance and in not trying to understand somebody else. And I'm not saying that that tolerance equals just accepting something, you know, that is a moral issue that we stand against. I think that's fine, but I also think that we were naive in many ways and not going out of our way to offer olive branches to the affected communities and to understand people of our own faith who are struggling with those issues.
Indeed.
Man, I'm on a roll. I'm hitting so many good talking points tonight.
Crushing things.
Oh my gosh. So, hey, what about, why do you like Joanna Brooks less and less?
Oh, let me open that up.
Like, let me find out.
I see. Well, I'm trying to remember. Oh, so
she's a guest. She's a guest blogger.
Every article she's writing, and Jeff, tell me what you think, because it seems like every article she's writing, she's getting more and more, I guess, unabashedly critical of the church and its stances, and kind of it's almost like she's removing herself from the equation and saying, those guys in the church, those guys in Mitt Romney and his camp, how do you guys reconcile all this? What up, B? And lights it on fire and walks away, right? Like, I just don't see her rhetoric as being very helpful at all.
In general, I don't, but I feel like at least this article, for example, really just is more of a call for Mitt Romney to more openly discuss his faith. So I don't feel like this... I get your overall criticism,
but it's
trite.
We've heard this before, and I mean, she's coming out with more examples of why Mormonism is different,
right?
More examples of why it may be peculiar and why Mitt Romney should address these issues.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know. In this case, I do agree with you, and I think a number of our listeners that I worry that Joanna Brooks is becoming some sort of unofficial spokesperson,
a fame monger
for the church. Now, what I don't mind is she offers an opposing point of view. You know, a lot of things Joanna Brooks says we're not going to get out of the church newsroom or from Brother Otterson, for example, because we have an agenda, and that's fine. Now, sometimes I do feel like she's treading, I don't know, dangerously. I'm not saying by any means she's coming close to apostatizing or any of the junk we dealt with in the 80s or anything like that with a lot of those academics who were excommunicated, nothing along those lines, but... I don't know if she's always doing us any favors, you know. And I think it's a hard place to be, though. What if you are more of a liberal academic, you consider yourself active in the church, you support the church, but at the same time you're able to sort of separate the spiritual from the administrative, from the more academic nature of assessing the church's position on stuff. I'm not using that saying that it's justification for just wantonly disregarding whatever, but I don't know. I don't think she's in the easiest position, but I agree with you and Principal Al that she's often just being critical where she doesn't need to be. And I've heard from sources in her book, The Book of Mormon Girl, for example, which I've yet to read and I want to, that at times she's just like overly critical of she's from Southern Orange County and just overly critical of just the culture and the church and the people and this and that. And I've had some friends who have read it and they're like, dude, this chick is like... I get it if you want to take things from an academic perspective, but this just sounds like you have a personal issue with stuff and you're trying to portray it as if official church policy was actually your upbringing, you know, and it might not have been. I see that seeping into a lot of what she writes. That's all.
Okay.
That said, I wouldn't mind Mitt Romney being a little more open about stuff and explaining himself, like why his own views diverge from the LDS church positions on immigration. That does bug me because I feel like the church has a position on immigration, sort of, and stuff like that, but it doesn't say that to be a faithful member of the church, you have to agree with the church on every single like political issue and stuff like this. Gay marriage was one thing, but other things along those lines, immigration, they leave a lot of room there for you to have your own personal political belief, and I think that's an important part of living the gospel.
Okay.
You do not believe me, though.
I do believe you.
Sure about that?
I have nothing to disagree with you with. Okay. All right, fine.
So as we go out today, great little thing showed up on Facebook on, quote, Thomas S. Monson's Facebook page called Mormon Avengers.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like a fake movie poster.
Why was this great?
I don't know. It's just stupid, but it made me laugh.
It is stupid. And we already have album art for this week, Jeff. We don't need more.
Well, I know, but it's funny because they're Mormon Avengers, and it's got a quote from Psalms.
Ba-da-ba.
Yay! Also, something we didn't mention a few weeks ago, just a quick little article that mentions the sort of viral nature of the I'm a Mormon campaign and how aside from the ones on LDS.org, the church is going out of its way to encourage people to have their own videos, to even make their own videos, and to get these on YouTube. And of course, the number of people who see these pales in comparison to typical YouTube content, but it's kind of an interesting little write-up. About this new viral nature of the I'm a Mormon campaign. People really trying to take it to different channels and different social media avenues to sort of slowly get it noticed. I think it's cool. I think it goes hand in hand with all the stuff we're seeing, even down to seeing what we wouldn't have seen even a number of years ago, having missionaries in Napa Valley followed around by a news crew, which I honestly don't know if a mission president would have okayed, you know, a couple years ago.
Right.
And also right. If a news agency would even be interested in doing it. So I think it's all paying dividends.
Groovy, man. I agree. Let's do this sucker.
Okay. Al is tired of doing the show, so we're going to finish now. I'm also tired of doing the show, so.
All right. Well, everybody, you know where you can reach us.
You know, shoot us an email at contact
on the thisweekinmormons.com.
Yeah. Contact at thisweekinmormons.com.
Oh, that's email for us, yeah?
Yeah.
Twitter.com/TheRealTwim.
And Facebook.com/ThisWeekInMormons.
All of these
places. That was just terrific, Al. I really enjoyed this week's show. I hope you did, too.
All right, everybody. Have a great week.
Thank you. Jeff? And to remind everyone of what we talked about this week, Hiram Smith guy and Jabari. That's really all that matters.
Michael Peterson.
And George Peterson. And apostles, missionaries, Ryan Gosling, stolen Books of Mormon, copies of the Book of Mormon, whatever you want to call it. Good week in Mormondom all around, folks.
Using stolen copies of the Book of Mormon to fund an ice cream parlor to pay for missionaries.
And that's really, that should be what we all aim for in life.
Amen.
Al, I just wish you good fortune and happiness. I love you a lot.
All right, dude. Have a good night,
man. All right, thanks, buddy. And everyone, thanks for tuning in to This Week in Mormons. Always appreciate it. Thank you so very much for listening in. We could not do this without you. So we hope you know how much you matter to us. And we hope to talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Time of our comfort and plenty. These are the days we've been working for. Nothing can touch us and nothing can harm us. Nothing goes wrong anymore. Feet on the dashboard, a cigarette string.